You don't want me to talk to you and keep fucking hitting me.
How many other corrupt motherfuckers are you working with on this side of the border?
Look, it's exactly what I told you, all right? They came to me and wanted details about her case, and yes, I did it. I gave it to them, but I never wanted anybody to get hurt, and I would have never gotten involved in pieces of shit if I thought that there was that.
Fuck! Okay! Fuck, okay!
Okay, it's not what we're looking for, Ted. You know what the beauty is of you being so beat to a pulp? Because no one's gonna notice a few more scratches. This is a new deal, Ted. I'm the one who decides whether your daughter get federal protection. Or whether we post your ex-wife's address on the internet. I decide whether you go to prison in a work camp in Missouri or a kill house like Corcoran. This is where you negotiate how to survive, my friend.
Okay. Look. I feel like this whole thing's just gotten away from me. I fucked up. Okay, I fucked up, but I'm in over my fucking head right now. I'm sorry if I... Fuck, get it out! Get it the fuck out! Get it the fuck out, all right? Get it out! Motherfucker! Fuck you! Fuck!
How's it going? Are you keeping well out there? It's me, your boy TT, here with you for another one of my patented solo casts. This is running a little bit late this week, as you can tell. I'm a little bit bunged up. Big plans to do a big Bono solo cast last week, but of course I got sick and literally my voice was gone Wednesday afternoon to Thursday night. Literally, I could not talk properly. I was leaving Andy voice notes, but I don't know why, because he could not make out what I was saying. My voice was so raspy and non-existent. But I'm back to my usual bunged up self right now. I'm back on the mend. This will be dropping, I think, Tuesday of the week of the 9th. The stuff I'm talking about might be a bit dated, and we will already probably have recorded our other main feed episode. I don't know why I'm telling you this. Forget I just said that. But I did want to talk about a movie that I had seen. And, you know, the Oscars are coming up this weekend, and it's a movie that I think possibly should have been in the running for at least one category in the Oscars, for Best Actress for Amanda Seyfried. I'm not talking about The Housemaid, although that did make a boatload of money. You know, what happens when you put Amanda Seyfried and Sydney Sweeney on the screen together? Pure box office gold. But what I'm actually talking about is a movie called The Testament of Anne Lee, which is about a historical figure, Anne Lee, from Manchester in the 1800s. And she became part of the Quaker movement, more specifically the Shaking Quakers. And it basically tells her story of how she became the figurehead of this religion, and they moved from England to America. And, you know, that part of it is fairly by the numbers. They were kind of met with skepticism when they came to America, but, you know, they grew and grew. But the most interesting thing about the film is it is a musical of sorts, in that the Shaking Quakers, how they express their feelings, joy, you know, pain, you know, confession, whatever you want to call it, they do it, they confess it, and then they start to moan and wail and shake their body and move it in rhythm, and this is kind of their act of prayer, I guess. And this happens multiple times during the film, and I think it's incredible. I think it is something that, when I was looking at it, I was like, everybody is moving in rhythm and sync. Not like a music video where, you know, it's choreographed within an inch of its life, but it also is, feels like it's free, you know what I mean? They're just like, yeah, just do what you want, to like, shake your body around, do this chant, and let yourself be free. And I remember when I was watching it, I was like, I don't agree with the religion aspect, but I do kind of want to get maybe on their wavelength in terms of how they're expressing themselves and how they're getting joy. Oh, the other thing as well is that they religion becomes celibate. So that's not something I'd be thoroughly on board with. But the dancing and the expression of joy and all that, you know, it's pretty astounding to look at. Really kind of hit me. Like, I was kind of getting chills watching it, being like, this is so interesting. And you know, how their expression of emotion really kind of stuck with me. The reason why it's celibacy is Anne Lee had 4 children and they all passed away fairly early in their life. So that's, she thinks she has a vision from God that, like, that's why there's so much suffering in the world, because they have, you know, broken the first temptation or whatever by Adam and Eve fornicating or whatever. So that's the only way to goodness, shall we say, is to be celibate. I can see why people were skeptical of it. You know, it affects a lot of people around her, her husband being one. But there's some really good performances, and like, I think Amanda Seyfried is pretty spectacular in the movie. She did something that I was quite impressed with. Apparently the director Mona Fassfeld told her she could not get Botox for the entirety of the shoot, so she was like, okay, I'll go. I went without it. I was like, to be honest, I think she looks great, you know. I think she's an interesting case study. If you think of all the Mean Girls, and by that I mean the girls in the movie Mean Girls, you had Lindsay Lohan, Amanda Seyfried, Lacey Chabert, and Rachel McAdams, and you would have thought it was going to be Lindsay Lohan. Obviously, she's had her difficulties. Like, Rachel McAdams was the one kind of out of the gate that was the big hit, The Notebook, and, you know, other things, but slowly but surely, Amanda Seyfried has kind of become this North Star for the next generation of actresses, that they kind of look up to her and they want to have the career that she's had. Like, she's had big box office successes with Mamma Mia. She's had Oscar nominations. She's won Emmys. Like, she's been pretty critically acclaimed, and she seems like she is also very cool. I don't know, I think maybe sometimes we take her for granted. Like, you know, if you're to think back, for me, when I think back to Mean Girls, I was like, oh yeah, she's the kind of ditzy one. And then, like, you look at that performance, even in Mean Girls, and she's so good in it, she plays it so well. I just think I like Marriage with the Potato, but it's me and Amanda Seyfried. I just think she's neat. And I kind of do sound like Marriage as my default at the moment. And I'll give you a heads up. This episode is probably not going to be my longest one. I can already feel the old vocal cords tightening. But, you know, I wanted to get something out because and they'll probably tell the story on this week's episode we record. But we weren't recording last week because he was supposed to be over doing the overlap stuff. And that got the kibosh put on it. It's not my story to tell. He'll have a funny anecdote, I'm sure, about it. So we cleared our schedules for that reason. And here we are. You're just stuck with me. So what else happened during the week? Oh, yes. what I want, if I'm looking at my notes here, what I wanted to talk about was Jim Carrey as well. And the whole thing with, is the guy who showed up to collect the Caesar Award actually Jim Carrey, or is it a stunt double, or is it his actual double, you know, all that crazy shite that people just love a conspiracy. They love the chance to sink their teeth into it. If you're not aware, Jim Carrey, who kind of has been not really playing the game, I guess, the Hollywood game the last few years. He'll show up in a Sonic movie and, you know, take the money for that or whatever, but he's become increasingly kind of critical of Hollywood and become a bit more reclusive. He's had strong opinions for the last while, like when he was with Jenny McCarthy, he was very much anti-vax. Is there a correlation between a big celebrity speaking out against vaccinations and the measles epidemic that is happening in the United States right now? Who can say? But to get back to the topic at hand, he showed up at the Caesar Awards and he was very, you know, gracious. He was signing autographs. He was, you know, kind of mugging for the camera, but he looked very strange. He had his face, which always would be cartoonish to begin with, looked very more so. It looked very kind of, he looked like he had bad plastic surgery, in my opinion. And, you know, people were jumping on this, being like, that's not him. Look at the difference in his face. Look at the difference, blah, blah, blah. They did mention the eye colour thing, which I thought was weird that, you know, they were brown normally and then they looked kind of greeny blue. I can't explain that. But then I think it's a drag performer who also makes masks and stuff, claimed that they were the ones that showed up as Jim Carrey and was doing all this stuff. And then it was like, somebody's like, it's definitely a double. It's not him. Look, he's talked on talk shows before about how he's used doubles. All this stuff, I don't even know if anybody else, if you guys are even seeing this. This is what I'm getting on my internet. We all have our own internets, I'm learning. And anyway, I thought it might be interesting to revisit an old Jim Carrey movie from the 90s, just to see, you know, was he, or what made him be who he was, the megastar back then. So I decided to watch the classic Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Excuse me.
That's quite a wrap you're wearing. Perhaps I could get you some fluffy new slippers made from the heads of innocent and defenseless baby seals.
Who is this ghastly man?
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. And you must be the Monopoly guy.
Hey. Thanks for the free parking.
Another activist, McGuire.
Activist? Yes. Activist, yes.
Mr. Ventura. There's nothing wrong with enjoying the fruits of nature. You should try it sometime.
All righty then. You know something? You're right.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
It's lovely, but I fancy myself in autumn.
God, 1995 was a more simpler time, wasn't it? We had Jim Carrey flailing his limbs around and making funny faces and making you laugh. I miss it. I watched this movie again, and this is one I had on videotape when I was younger. If you remember the premise, Ace Ventura has retired from private life and he's living in Tibet as a monk and is called in to settle a dispute in Africa between the Wachutu tribe and the God, I can't remember, the Hitachi or something. And because their great white bat has gone missing. This movie was a smash hit, grossing $212 million worldwide back in 95. So, like, I think that's like a billion adjusted for inflation. He really was a fucking huge star. People just wanted to go see him. And the movie is quite, much like its previous entry in the series, insensitive at times, particularly to the culture of Africa, I would say. But God almighty, did it have so many bits in it that just had me pissing myself laughing. There's a bit that, you know, you don't get a lot of things. Actually, now that I think about it, I watched this on my good friends at Now TV. I think it's on Netflix, so you can get it there. And Testament of Annalee is in the cinema, by the way. You won't get it anywhere else yet. But you can get this on Netflix. I watched it on Now TV. I'd be interested to watch it on Netflix because there was a scene in the movie that I was like, I always remember. He's in a hut. And is it Greenwell or whatever his aide in this one is, the British portly gentleman, comes in and he goes, whoa? Like he pulls up like a big brush thing to cover himself up. And I always assumed he was jerking off, like when I was younger, when I watched it. But in this version, he you see him doing the motion of like bent over, like pulling the plum off himself. And I was like, was that always in it? Like, there's a few scenes that seemed a bit longer. I'm like, that wasn't in the version I watched back in the day. So interesting. But yeah, there's a scene where the princess is dancing towards him and he's like, I am a man of simple pleasures. I do not need the flesh or whatever. And it's just like her crotch is just in his face and it's a side view and he's like, do you have a dollar, you know? Lots of good stuff in it, man. It's like 90 minutes as well, like, so like the bit with the rhino where he has to like crawl out of its ass and it's like, oh, the rhino is giving birth. Just some of the noises and the face he's making. Oh, it made me laugh. It made me smile. If you're looking for something to give you a laugh, I'd recommend you go back and watch it. Do I think it's a better movie than the first movie? No, because the first movie has an actual story and a pretty good, like, it's kind of a comedy second, I think. The first movie is like a detective noir kind of thing where he's trying to like uncover a conspiracy. This is just, you know, bonkers at times. And you know, you have Bob Gunton, my man, who plays Quinn, or he owns Quinlan Safari Park. He has a little crow on his shoulder in it, very cute. You have Simon Callow playing the rich guy that hires him to find the bat, but ultimately he has taken it for, I don't know, some sort of land scheme. It's not really important. Mr. Echo is in the movie as the guard who Ace gets a elephant to sit on. There's lots of, you know what was refreshing about it? It's like, there's a scene where there's like a baboon guard in the village. And it's like, it's a real monkey that they gave a spear and a shield to. And I was like, huh, they actually did that. They've got a monkey. Now, whether you want to go into the logistics of animal cruelty or should they be making the monkey do it. But like, it was a real production that they did. I'm sorry, I harp on about this all the time, but like, I just hate that everything is so fucking fake now. So when I go back and I watch a movie and people are actually doing stuff in it, I'm always like, wow, that's more impressive to me than any sort of computer CGI shit. Anyway, the movie's fine. It's fun. It's a good bit of fun. You're going to have a good time. And, you know, the reason I chose that one as opposed to one of the big hitters like Dumb and Dumber or, you know, I'd like to watch The Mask, but unfortunately, for what a fucking massive movie it was, it's not streaming anywhere. Much like, I might just take a tangent here, much like a lot of fucking stuff, I probably ranted about this before, but it's not streaming anywhere. Like, let me just try The Mask. Oh, you know what? I tell a lie, it is now on Prime Video. So maybe I'll give that a go. Fucking making a liar out of me. What? Generally, like if I type in, oh, I don't know, Hunt for Red October. Don't know why I said that, but damn it, that's on Paramount. All right, let's just see me make a fool of myself in real time because I'm not editing this out. What's a movie that I love? Well, let's see if Dumb and Dumber is streaming anywhere. How about that? Sky. Okay, all right. Fine. We'll do one more. One more. What's a big movie of the 90s? Titanic. Right? Disney and Prime. Fucking hell. Anyway, nothing streaming. You can all go to hell. Okay. Not all yous, just movie execs in general. I love you guys. Shit. I mean, I like you guys as a bunch of friends. I'm going to talk about two more movies. First one, at the top of the episode, you would have heard a clip from Sicario, a fantastic movie that I revisited there while I was not feeling so well. The reason why I wanted to look at it is we're doing The Bourne Identity on the Patreon this week, and that features a lot of CIA suits talking about, you know, doing stuff in different countries and taking out political leaders, blah, 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 but it's all Europe and African based. Sicario has a lot of that too, but it's all to do with Mexico and the cartels and the borders and stuff like that there, and it's fucking awesome. Now that is not streaming anywhere. I had to watch that through my nefarious means, but it just, you know what, it scratched my itch for like a kind of an action thriller. Like, there's not a huge amount of action scenes in it. There is the infamous border crossing scene, which, God, it's a 10 out of 10 in terms of tenseness. And there's little moments of levity in it where it's like, oh, there's a car. Like, I got a boner because he thinks that, like, there's a cartel guy next to him. And this guy is going to be able to, like, unholster his weapon and shoot somebody. It stars Emily Blunt as an FBI agent who's she's asked to volunteer onto a multi-agency task force that then go in to Juarez, even though they tell her it's going to be El Paso, to kind of scoop up a bad guy. And then that leads into a bunch of other stuff. But when she joins the task force, she meets Alejandro, who is played to perfection by my man Benicio Del Toro. Jesus, you talk about a cool motherfucker. And then you have Josh Brolin there as well, who is, I think his name is Traeger. He's like the CIA spook who claims to just be like a Department of Defense consultant or something, but he knows everything and, you know, the kind of guy that can sleep anywhere, so you know he's probably seen a lot of shit. And it just is, like, it's 2 hours on the dot, give or take, and it hums along, and you're like, man, like, it's only 11 years ago, but again, they should be making 3 or 4 of these a year. It's the first script written by Taylor Sheridan, who we covered on the podcast. He also wrote Hell or High Water. And he hasn't written a movie in like 4 years. He's been doing TV with Yellowstone and... what's it? Yellowstone, 1918 and 1893 are all his Yellowstone shows. He has Landman, he has Lioness, he has Tulsa King, and he has Mayor of Kingstown. These are all real shows that star real actors, like the Nicole Kidman and Morgan Freeman are in Lioness, so is Zoe Saldana. Sylvester Stallone is in the Tulsa King show. Jeremy Renner is in Mayor of Kingstown. Billy Bob Thornton is in Landman. Like, these are all big shows that he apparently writes himself and show runs by himself. Anyway, my point is, he also writes a mean movie script, and I wish maybe he'd fucking take a step back from TV and write another movie. Because I'm missing him, and the industry is missing him. There, I've said it. If you haven't seen Sicario, it's one of the best thrillers of the last 15 years, I would say. And you're doing yourself a disservice. There. One last movie, and then I'll talk about one other thing, and then I'll wrap it up. One last movie. I got a gift of a Mubi, M-U-B-I, Mubi subscription from my dear friend Gary for my 40th birthday. Gary, thank you so much. I've been getting some great use out of it. If you don't know what the crack with Mubi is, it is a curated streaming service where I think the whole deal is one new movie is added every day and one is removed, but they stay on the service for like 60 days. So, and it is more, I want to say art house is a good way of putting it fair than, well, like, it's a mix, but there's a lot more art house than you would find on Netflix or Prime or Sky, whatever. Funny enough, like, When Harry Met Sally is only on Mubi. It's not on any other streaming services. I'm like, how is that not on Netflix? You know, see, that's my point. It comes back around. How is that? Like, the best rom-com of the past 40 years is not on Netflix. It's not on Amazon. Like, you can't just watch it. So anyway, the movie I watched on Mubi is Good Time, directed by the Safdie brothers, starring Robert Pattinson. And I'll just do it real quick. It is phenomenal. It is my favorite of the Safdie brothers' movies. And watching it back, it's an hour 40. It is relentless in its pacing. It is a fantastic portrait of America. Like, it's made in 2017, I think. And it is just about modern day America, I think. How there's certain parts of it that will just suck you dry and like bleed you, and it's summed up in the character of Connie, Constantine Nikos, I believe, is the Robert Pattinson character, who, by the way, like, he is just one of this next generation of like movie stars or actors, whatever you want to classify them as, but like, he has impressed me so much, considering he was the kind of mopey dweeb, in my opinion, in those Twilight movies, even though he was an absolute heartthrob for all the ladies. But he has just grown into himself as like such a little freak, such a little weirdo. And he's also Batman, you know, so he's fantastic in this as somebody who... every character who comes into contact with Connie, their life is worse off for him. The plot of the story is very much that Connie and his brother Nicky, they rob a bank, and essentially there's like the red you know, spray from the bank money goes off, and Nicky gets caught, and he needs to be bailed out by Connie. So Connie's whole night is basically trying to get $10,000 together. And being a Safdie Brothers movie, they hire these like great real world people, and it gives it that real air of authenticity, you know, from the bailed bondsman to the people working in the like care homes in the hospital in it, to you know, the taxi drivers. It's just everything. It just smacks of New York. Like, there are like exceptions to it, like Jennifer Jason Leigh is in a small role in it, Barkhad Abdi from Captain Phillips is in it, like, but they play real world people in the movie very well. And yeah, like, Connie just like uses and chews up and spits out everybody that he comes in contact with. And by the end, when it gets to the very end of the movie, it's just like, what was it all for? And I kind of feel like that's the way America, if not the world at large, is going right now, where it's just like, yeah, everybody will just, you know, step on the next person to get what they need, whether on a global economic scale or, you know, just the person next door to you. That might sound very nihilistic. I'm generalizing, of course, but like, it just seems that, like, I don't know, the, you know what, forget it. It's a great time. It's, you know what, a good time. Good time is a great time. Don't mind me going down my existential crisis. But, like, what's interesting about it is I see so much of Marty Supreme in the movie. There's like, you know, it's set in New York, but it's set in the 50s. It has a pulsing like score and soundtrack. Lots of running around, lots of screaming. But what's also interesting is there's been a bit of a smear campaign for like Marty Supreme, because they brought up like there was some issue with one of the miners that worked on the movie. And like, I remember thinking, I don't remember there being any young people in it. And then when I watched the back, it's like, oh, there's a girl in it who says she's 16. And at one point, Robert Pattinson kisses her to distract her while he, like, a news report about him being on the run is on the TV. And I'm wondering, is that the thing? But it's really kind of done damage to Timothy Chalamet's chances, it seems, anyway, that, like, you know, he didn't win BAFTA. He lost Screen Actors Guild to Michael B. Jordan, which, if he fucking won the Oscar, I know the Oscars are bullshit, but, like, if he won it for Sinners, I'd be very happy. But, and then I saw there's another thing that's resurfaced now of, like, I think it was from 2019, of Chalamet like bad-mouthing opera and ballet, and like, where are people pulling these clips from, and like, why is it happening now? Like, it's real fucking Harvey Weinstein shit. Anyway, good time. It's on Mubi if you have a subscription. If you're lucky enough to have a subscription like myself, go check it out, because it's fucking awesome. If you don't, Uncut Gems is sitting on Netflix, and I think I'm going to watch that again next, just to see how it holds up, because I loved it the first time, even though I had like a newborn for about 10 days, and I felt like it was giving me a panic attack while I was watching it with the baby on my chest, yet I could not look away. One last thing before I go, and I'll get out of here then. I talked last solo cast I did about The Pitt. I'm still watching it up to date on season 2. Season 2 is a bit of a drop down from season 1, but still pretty excellent TV. But another medical show is back on the air. It's the Scrubs reboot. If you know anything about me, you know I wouldn't say I'm a Scrubs mega fan, but I have watched the series. I've seen pretty much every episode of the series multiple times. It was a steady diet of my smoking weed at 11 o'clock at night phase, and it was on ER every night not Eeyore, E4, every night. Eeyore is on Netflix. Just give that a look. It's fucking awesome. So they've rebooted it after, I don't know how many years, 18 years, something like that. Like, four kids and got one his. It's not very good. I'll just say this. It's on Disney Plus. It's not very good. A few things that I liked about it. I have a soft spot for it, and it just made me smile, I guess. But it's not very funny. If you're not a fan of the original, you'll find nothing to like here, I don't think. And yeah, I mean, it was just nice to see them all back on screen. I thought I was going to feel the same way, like, say something. So, like, That 70s Show has That 90s Show on Netflix. And I was like, oh, like, I'm going to, you know, enjoy that, hopefully for nostalgia's sake. And The Gang or other does, like, barely made it through an episode of it. Like, so I'm giving Scrubs a lot more leeway than That 90s Show. But is it That 90s Show or is it That 2000s Show? I'm That 90s Show, right? But anyway, it's 22 minutes. Each episode is 22 minutes. Hooch is in it, you know, always a plus. That's what I kind of like. You just see, like, a few of the other characters, like Dr. Mickhead is there. They're just floating around. Donald Faison, Turk, still looks fucking great, as does Carla. JD, you're seeing how the rubber has hit the road. And Elliot, I mean, Sarah Chalk still looks great. Sarah Chalk's a very talented actress, I have to say, considering she also voices Beth on Rick and Morty. You know, a lot of range there for her. Anyway, I'm running down the road here. As you can tell, my nose is getting more blocked by the second, and my voice is crackling with each word. And my brain is shutting down. So, back to regular schedule programming next week. Me and Andy will both be in the chair. If you want to help us out and give us a rating or review, that'd be great. 5 stars only. Bringing back that old catchphrase. How about that? And what else? Oh yeah, Patreon. Like I said, we're covering The Bourne Identity this week on the Patreon as part of our Matt Damon mini-series. You can get access to that for the low fee of €5 a month. And that'll give you access to all of our content behind the paywall. We've got a bunch of other mini-series, like What's So Great About the MCU, What's So Great About 90s Action Movies, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willy Slops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies, What's So Great About the films of Tony Scott, What's So Great About Heist Movies, What's So Great About Movies from the Year 2007, and a bunch of other one-offs and top fives there. It's a good time. And of course, you get the big L from me once you get behind that paywall, even though I gave it out earlier by accident. But none of you heard that. I should probably go back and bleep it. Anywho, I'm going to go. Keep looking after each other out there. Mind yourselves. And I will see you next week, where I might be doing a little bit of a shaker dance. Goodbye. Peace before us. All is concert, all is summer, while to heaven we are going. But in the desert we are leaving.